is. Looks like you've got some kind of zombie takeout in there or something.
Hello, and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-Moving Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a voicemail from Bodo.
Bodo here. Good news. I am now negative. So back to work I go. Still got the headaches and stuff like that. Lungs hurt a little bit, but besides that, I'm feeling great. House 2. My gosh. Kind of fun. Good stop motion animation. Puppetry was a lot to be desired. Storyline, what the hell is that? John Mayer reminding everybody why he never needs to act, ever. Ratzenberger, boy, he storms onto that screen and he just takes over for the maybe 15, 20 minutes he's on there. Absolutely wonderful. And the most important star of the whole show, Kane Hodder. Without any makeup, it's a pleasure to see him like that. I mean, the man is a legend. Anyway, I would give this more than I did the other one. I would give it 3.5. I enjoyed it. You guys keep up the great work. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you, Bodo. I'm glad to hear you're negative. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I think maybe when you said John Mayer, you meant Bill Maher.
I think John Mayer would have been an improvement. Although, I mean, it's not Maher's fault.
Well, I mean, Maher's character is named John, so that might have been why the wires crossed. I mean, I agree with you in general about Bill Maher. We'll get to that later. Slight correction. Unfortunately, Ratzenberger's only on screen for maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
20 would have been amazing.
Remember what I said last week? I think that was during the episode.
Mm.
The only thing I remember about this movie is John Ratzenberger just stealing the show.
And he did for 10 minutes.
And then I found out that it was 10 minutes out of an hour and 30 minute slog.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Kane Hodder is best known for playing Jason Voorhees in the Friday the 13th movies.
Oh, okay.
He was the guy in the gorilla suit that got punched over the railing.
That's funny.
Yeah. all right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 1987, House 2, the second story, continuing what is now our House quadrilogy. We're doing awful rhythm. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the late 80s. Seriously, what the fuck were we thinking?
And also brought to you by Bill Tower, electrician and adventurer. Though he's probably not going to fix your electricity, at least not on Little League night. All right, so, and of course, I'm like, are you sure you want to do all four before we start the episode tonight?
Next one looks like a really good, legit horror movie.
I've never seen the other two. I have seen these two.
And four is going to be abysmal, but it'll be fun to tear it apart.
So we have a completely different cast of characters and a completely different house in this one from the first one. It's not clear who all of these people are to each other, although it begins with this couple who live in this big house who, for some reason, have to give up their kid for adoption. And
in a rush.
Yeah, in a rush, they have to give up their kid for adoption. It's never explained. And honestly, it doesn't matter. The whole first half hour of this movie is just an utter waste of time.
All but 10 minutes of this movie is a complete and utter waste of time.
Well, we'll get to that in the review, but let me just thumb up the plot summary. So they give him up for adoption, and then as soon as they give him up for adoption, they're confronted by this ghost from the Old West who guns them down. He's looking for a crystal skull. The crystal skull, however, is buried with his old partner in his grave. that his great-grandson, who moves into this house, our hero of the film, starts studying up on this crystal skull for some reason. I'm not even, I don't remember why exactly it captured his attention. It was in a few books.
Yeah, he was looking
And then
at
he's.
pictures of his parents. It turns out he was the kid who was being given away at the beginning.
Yes, he was the kid who's being given away at the beginning. And yes, that's his great-great-grandfather, or great-grandfather, or great-great-grandfather, or something like that.
Great,
He,
great.
great-great. So then he realizes that it's most likely buried with him. So he does what any sane and rational person would do and digs up his great-great-grandfather, who turns out to be alive from the powers of the crystal skull. And he talks a lot about the Old West with them, and seems to know how the Old West is portrayed in modern media somehow, even despite being underground.
Well, he underground, and he went under in 1910-ish,
Yes.
or thereabouts, because it was 70 years. This was 80, actually 16, because this was 70 years.
He watched TV for a few hours and understood exactly how the West is being portrayed in media at the time. He then, of course, tells them all about how it really was, and then we have a string of what seemed to be out of work professional wrestlers steal the crystal
Crystal skull.
skull. They, of course, each time they go into another dimension to bring it back, they bring in a creature or two with them from each dimension until they have this whole
Menagerie.
interdimensional fam. And just as they're going in one last one, an electrician shows up. It's hardly even, of course, relevant to the plot, but he does kind of bail them out because he is a professional adventurer. And then, of course, finally, after all the other fake shumps are done, the gunslinger returns, and of course he is the heavy, but he does not have the personality of a Richard Mall. He just kind of grunts like Frankenstein and says a few words at random, and hilarity ensues.
And as soon as I saw Ari Gross's name in the credits, I knew this is going to be more of a comedy than a horror movie.
I'm not wasn't really familiar with him. Like, I think he was he like a regular.
He's done a lot of TV work, a lot of very like sitcom-y, late comedy stuff. And he was sent away as an infant. I'm kind of wondering how he recognizes his parents once he's looking through the books.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of the story that really just makes no sense.
And I never talk about the music, surprisingly, in movies, but I just have to, one thing just stuck out to me. Simmons'
No.
electronic drums really don't work in a horror score. It was right before the ironing board gag. You get this, organy sort of, patch, dark and eerie, and this random, random hits on these Simmons pads. Think 80s 80s synth drums. Those are Simmons pads. It's just really broke the mood.
Right. I mean, and I thought we were, I was still on board. I was happy with the ironing board shtick because I was like, oh, it's like the old Tom and Jerry thing. The other one was kind of a Bugs Bunny thing, and we're gonna get some more of that in this one. And well, the problem is, the last one, they spent about 20 minutes, investing in the characters and pretty much giving us their backstory. And it's kind of slow, but it pays off in the end because it's a key part of the story of the house taking advantage, trying to take advantage of our hero and winning. Here, none of the backstory mattered. No, nothing was used again. The girlfriend or wife or whatever that was, they didn't even really explain who she was to him, was irrelevant because she just leaves and never comes back because her boss told her that he's sitting with another girl at a party. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
I'm said that the Simmons drums broke the mood. I'm being a little disingenuous because there really wasn't a mood to break.
No, there was not.
I couldn't decide which couple between the two that lived there was more annoying.
That was the other thing. The other characters in the first one were likable, you know? Yeah, the nosy neighbor, as nosy as he was, turned out to be like, you know,
George
Dwin
Wendt.
had his best interest at his part. And here it's just kind of like, all right, whatever. But
They were exhuming a corpse and I was bored.
yes, it was pretty boring, even up to them, when they're exhuming a corpse. The one thing that was kind of freaking me out, for in the beginning, that had my attention that I could not let go. Jonathan Stark, was that who Jim Carrey modeled his Dumb and Dumber character off of?
Oh, could have been. I don't know the year on Dumb and Dumber, so.
It was like 93,
Oh,
94.
okay. Very possible then. They were
Because,
very
I mean,
similar.
he had the same haircut almost. The only thing was missing was the chipped tooth. And he did, like, you know, a lot of goofiness here too, but of course not Jim Carrey level goofiness.
Well, it's kind of like Will Arnett's character on Arrested Development, but more annoying.
Yes.
That's kind of the character. Also, when they exhume the corpse, he pops up. He's wearing this, what I describe as a skeletal Dr. Zaius mask. I was very relieved when it just turned out to be a mask that Gramps
Right.
was wearing.
Yeah. Dr. Zaius.
It looked like a skeletal Dr. Zaius. And speaking of great great Gramps, he drove incredibly well for someone who'd been in the ground for 70 years.
And who had only ridden horseback.
Also, one thing I did was impressed by, there was a comment on the ozone layer and ozone, in the environment in an 87 movie. That was nice.
We were talking about the ozone a bit here. I mean, of course, it was a character that had, I mean, he was just talking about words that he heard on the news kind of
Correct.
thing, which was realistic.
Now, I watched this on Tubi.
Same here.
I have to comment on an ad. I never do this, but Ice-T was doing a CarShield
You know,
ad.
minus John Ratzenberger, it was like one of the most interesting things that happened while we were watching this.
And just Bill Maher. I'm beginning to realize just how eminently punchable Bill Maher is whenever I see him on screen.
I mean, he was probably the second best actor in this, though, if you think about it, because he was playing an asshole.
Well,
I could
yeah.
just
I mean,
picture
it
him
wasn't really
talking
acting.
about. I could picture him talking about the kind of guy that he was playing, you know, the guy who runs to the person's girlfriend who wants to, you know, sleep with that girl, of course, and was looking for a reason to break the two of them up. So he's punchable, of course, and he does his job well.
Well, I mean, he was just kind of being himself, but it's good casting, I suppose.
Yeah.
I also appreciate the Reagan jokes, being, of that age.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, right. The Western guy talking about
Gramps
Gramps talking
was
about.
talking about Reagan being a wimp. But at 30 minutes in, I have the note, "Where is Ratzenberger? I was promised Ratzenberger."
I think around the same time I go, I thought the first one took a long time to get going. It's probably the same part. You know, it was about a half hour in. The Stone Age guy, of course, has a long knife.
I did appreciate this professional wrestler cameo and how a jungle materialized upstairs that basically turned into a wrestling match.
Yeah.
And then, they're f he was but he fell out of the tree in the jungle and he falls through the full the jungle floor back into the house. That was amusing.
Right. If they just could have kept, I mean, because the premise of House is great. I mean, the whole dimension or interdimensional thing going on instead of just a haunted house. And there's so much they could have done here. Although I have in my notes, OMG, they killed Thog, you bastards.
Old
Moving
TAS reference.
on.
On the positive side, I also got a kick out of the caterpillar puppy.
You did.
It's this giant, animatronic caterpillar with a puppy face. It was cute.
I was just kind of like, really?
Also, there's a scene where Charlie, Jonathan Stark's character, is sleeping with a plastic hollow wiffle ball bat. Like, he thinks he's going to protect himself with it.
That's his defense, yeah.
Yeah. 59:30, nearly an hour into an hour, a nearly hour and a half movie, Ratzenberger shows up.
I think my favorite part, one of my favorite parts of his scene is 10 minutes. And it's funny how much we can spend on his 10 minutes of the film.
Okay.
But neither of them ask Ratzenberger where he gets his, got his sword from.
No, no.
He just walks in with the sword. I mean, of course, we see him take it out, but they don't.
Yeah, I love that. He's just, they're grabbing their, little, almost like toy swords that they have. He opens his case, has this, like, beautiful, like, pristine saber.
Gold handle.
Mm-hmm. And he's kind of doing a milder version of the Cliff accent.
Right.
I actually it almost watched...
would have been better if he had just came in with the mailman uniform and stuff.
Because I watched an interview with him. I paused the movie just to hear his actual natural voice.
Yeah.
He's from Connecticut. He has a little bit of a Northeast accent, but obviously nothing like Cliff. He's kind of like half-assing it in the movie. The accent, not the performance at all. I loved when he pulled on the wire, it broke the wall, and he just kept pulling it.
I also love how when they're in the tunnel and they're looking at the scene, he just looks annoyed the whole time. Yeah. They're like trying to take the lead.
Uh-huh.
He has this face of just like, the fuck?
He has this look, it's just this fuck my life look on his face when they,
right.
I think it was when they stopped the sacrifice. He just looks down like, oh, fuck my life. But before then, he has the best line in the movie, possibly the only good line in the movie. He breaks through the wall because he was pulling on the cable. It broke through the wall. And he says, and it's this big hole leading to this, jungle. Looks like he got some kind of alternative universe in there or something.
Just the typical repairman kind of way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you ever see one of those? Hate when that happens.
Hmm. But yeah, it's a glorious 10 minutes of the film. And then the heavy showed up.
Well, wait a minute. One last thing about Ratzenberger's thing. I looked it up. Culver Studios, now Amazon Studios, is at 9336 Washington Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
In Culver City, California. Mm. Although for some reason they have it as Highland, California, which I'm not sure why.
But then
that's on his card.
Yeah. The heavy shows up and they get into a gunfight. And like the main character, Ari Gross's character, I can't think of his name offhand. Oh, Jesse. Shoots Slim in the head, basically shoots his head off. And I'm thinking, if Slim is undead, why does he need a head? And I was right. He came back without the head.
Now, I mean, if they were going with the physics of the first one, that actually would have worked, because the first one, you could kill them with the shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. That's true.
And how would Gramps know who killed his Ma and Pa?
Yeah, yeah. There is, by the way, a little bit of trivia. There is one connection to the previous one. Dwyer Brown, who played William Catt's lieutenant, Roger's lieutenant in the Vietnam flashbacks, in this one played Clarence, the father.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, of course, he eventually defeats Slim, and he goes and he buries the grandfather because, I guess now that Slim is dead, the magic keeping the grandfather alive is no more.
And I'm deducting, a half a brain for this.
Mm.
He doesn't bury the fucking skull.
I was just getting to that. He leaves the skull as a grave marker.
What? Has to have been the dumbest thing I've seen in this whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's saying a lot.
It seems like a nice small sequel, but they knew damn well there wasn't going to be a sequel.
Right.
So, yeah. Sequels and remakes.
Sequels and remakes.
It was followed by two sequels, House 3 and House 4. We'll be reviewing both of them. The next one, also not a direct sequel to the original. 4 is a direct sequel to the original.
Yeah, so we get to see Cat again.
And on to Brains.
On the brains.
Like I said, I think I mentioned these off air. Ratzenberger more than doubled the rating. He earned it a 1.5, so it's a 2.5 for me.
I was gonna give it a 2. Ratzenberger gives it 1, but I'm deducting half for the skull being left out in the open after it being the MacGuffin. So we're left at 2.
All right. And what have we learned?
We learned that you either quit while you're ahead or you bring in more Ratzenberger.
And I learned that crystal skulls should be avoided at all costs. They never lead to anything good.
It leads to bad cinema. You know, I've never seen that Indiana Jones movie, actually.
Neither have I, but I mean, I've heard enough to know I
And
don't
then,
want to.
right, it's kind of strange because, I like the other ones as, warts and all.
All right, that's it for House 2. Until next time, we'll be continuing the quadrilogy with House 3, the horror
We'll end the
show.
episode with, "Thank you, sir. May I have another?"
Always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.